The following episode of FOFOP is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15, or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. My name is Charlie Clawson, and my guest this week is someone who, if you're not familiar with his voice, you are definitely familiar with his work, particularly if you listen to Hamish and Andy, of which he's the producer, particularly if you listen to Willosophy or TOFOP, which he's also the producer, particularly if you've seen his YouTube channel or his podcast, 20th Century Boy. It is, of course, a radio mic, aka podcast mic, when he's slumming it with Will and I. Welcome to FOFOP.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's really interesting, actually, because the podcast mic moniker, which Will Anderson actually invented, right, has really taken off. And it's crazy that these names kind of have started entering a world of their own. But yeah, it was originally radio mic, but I wouldn't say I'm slumming it with you guys.
Is there any other person who's known by a famous sort of moniker that gets downgraded when they do like a different medium? I'm trying to think if there's no like...
Yeah, it's like if Eminem was... Smarties. He ends up being Smarties when he's working with new up-and-coming rappers.
Yeah, the announcer at the MCG is known as the voice of the G. I wonder if he's like sometimes like the voice of the wedding reception centre, you know, the Greensboro wedding reception centre.
Yeah.
Now, people who listen to TOFOP or FOFOP or Willosophy may not be familiar with the fact that you actually do have an on mic and an on camera persona. So I'm interested to know, because I think the interesting thing about what you do is you obviously love media. Like, you love broadcasting, you love radio, you love YouTube, all this kind of stuff. Yet you have an ability to move in front of and behind the microphone with equal aplomb. Did you set out with one thing in particular? Like, is it that you started in as a producer and then was like, oh, I think I could actually do this? Or was it the other way around?
The first thing I ever did was a radio show at SynFM, which is a student radio station in Melbourne. I did a radio show called The Yellow Family, which I wouldn't call a radio show that these days. But it was a radio show about The Simpsons. So it was a radio show where we reviewed a Simpsons episode every week, me and one of my high school friends. And I guess I was never really sure what I wanted to do, because even when I was a kid, I was like making like little short movies and stuff. And I always just liked, I was always good with computers, and I always just liked editing and making and stuff. So yeah, I never had a particular goal of what I wanted, and I still don't know what I want, but I've just always been enjoying like being a part of things. And I started in commercial radio before I kind of moved almost full time into podcasting now. So I don't really do anything in radio at all. But that is where the radio mic name came from.
And is that a reflection, moving some radio into podcasting, do you think that's more of a reflection of where, you know, entertainment or audio entertainment is going or has gone?
I think so, because like I always wanted to work in radio. I always thought it would be awesome. And then essentially when the pandemic hit, anyone who was like freelancing or working casually in radio, there were just no positions for you anymore, which is totally reasonable. But after the pandemic, mid-pandemic, I guess, a lot of resources started going towards podcasts. And yeah, like while there seems to be a lot of work in podcasting, there doesn't seem to be too much work going in radio. So I guess you kind of just have to follow where there is work and where there is resources.
Well, it's interesting, because I guess when you have kind of entered the industry, in inverted commas, there is, you say you talk about there was more work in podcasting. You know, the way when Will and I started TOFOP in 2010, there was no work. It was a hobby, you know, like, you know, we joked for years and years, it's our fake radio show. The idea that, you know, someone can actually change gears or, you know, work in podcasting and radio is awesome, I reckon. I mean, I wish maybe it started a bit later once the industry was more established so I had that option. I mean, I did do a tiny bit of radio work at Triple J years ago.
Cool.
You know, I did a guesties on Charlie Pickering's show when he and Mel Banton had a show. And even with Sammy Cav, you know, in about 10 years ago, he was like, do you think you'd like to do radio? And he set me up with like an air check at Today FM, and I went in and did a couple of trials. But I never really felt like... The thing about radio is I never felt like I could compress my stories enough to get them out in 2 minutes. You know, like when I've done publicity for shows I've worked on as an actor and I've gone in to just promote them, I always feel like under a lot of pressure because normally the producer will call you and say, hey, you know, the guys are going to be talking about this. Have you got any stories about this, that or the other? And I would have to like go, all right, how can I amend my stories to be under like 2.5 minutes? And can I get out on a button? And I think I've told this story before, but I did when Jules Lund was doing that breakfast show with Merrick and Sophie Monk.
Yes.
And Mel B for a time, although she wasn't there when I went in. I remember they said the same thing, which is like, oh, have you got any pranks or anything that you played on the cast of Home and Away? And I had this story, which, you know, I thought was pretty funny about Lynn McRanger. Whenever she does the Perth Telethon, they always get her name wrong. They always call her Linda McGregor or a variation, but never her actual name, Lynn McRanger. And when she told me that, when I got back to studio, I went and changed all the signs around studio, like on her dressing room and stuff, to be Linda McGregor, Linda McGregor. So I thought, oh, that's a good story because I can establish that really quickly and, you know, there's a good button to get out on and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But when I walked into the studio, some shit had gone down prior to me walking in. I don't know, like with a previous segment, and everyone was in a foul mood.
But when you say like, some shit went down, do you mean like it looked like they were like arguing or like...
I could sense walking in that there was tension amongst people.
Yeah.
Like Merrick, who I know, you know, and I don't have an issue with Merrick, but he didn't even really make eye contact with me. He was like busy talking to the producer and Sophie Monk, I don't think even acknowledged me. And Jules was kind of, because he's a friend of mine, was kind of like giving me all the attention. And I could just sense that something had gone down. I didn't know what at the time. And I remember I'm telling this story. And as I'm telling the story, I could see that apart from Jules, no one was listening. And so I'm getting more and more nervous and panicked and trying to get to this punchline, which I'd been cooking up for like 6 days. And, you know, I finally got it. And then Jules like threw an ad or whatever. And I was like, okay. And so I left. And as I was on my Uber on the way home, Jules called me and said, oh, look, I'm really sorry. We'd just done a segment that went terribly weird, like I can't remember what it was, but it was something where Merrick had to dunk himself in baked beans or something like that, and so like he just cleaned the beans off himself when I'd walked in, and so there was all this kind of shit going on, and I was just like, oh right, yeah, so that wasn't my fault, but it was just a perfect
go ahead. Yeah. I don't know what I was gonna say. Sorry, I thought that was the end of the story, and I was going to say, by telling that story, you've actually kind of proven your own point about how you didn't want to do condensed material, because that was a long but good story, right? Yeah. And I guess like for me, what I'm curious about with you and Will is like, because Tofop is one of the oldest ongoing podcasts in the country, right? Which I think is awesome, and it's great to have that legacy. But like, did you think that it was going to get to a point where you could turn some kind of profit or make any money off it? Because there's a substantial Patreon backing and there's ad revenue on the pod now. Like, did you ever think it would get to that?
I don't know if we had a plan. I think we were always looking to the States to see, you know, because we were modeling ourselves after Smodcast, Kevin Smith's podcast, which was him and Scott Mosier, who would just do these 1 hour podcasts where they would just, you know, tell anecdotes and explore hypotheticals. And, you know, it was really a show about nothing. And we sort of would see what they were doing in terms of, okay, so they were doing live tours and that seemed to be revenue. And they never really jumped ship to like a major backer or a rate. There was no, I don't recall them ever jumping on board to a platform like Spotify or anything like that. So I think our attitude was always, we'll just do it until an offer comes in that seems to be, you know, something. And we, as you know, having worked with Will and I now for 3 years or so, you know that we're not really, like we're good at the talking stuff, but a lot of the other stuff, we're not really that great at marketing, production, any of that kind of stuff. But that's why we brought on Sam Cav is I think it got to a point where we're like, well, we have this established audience and they haven't gone anywhere. You know, we didn't become the alternative Hamish and Andy where we had like hundreds and thousands of downloads, but we had a, you know, a fairly decent, healthy audience. So we knew that was something there. And so when we spoke to Sam, I mean, again, Jules Lund is coming to this story, funnily enough. I actually was catching up with Jules in Melbourne and Sam was there and we went for a jog. And on the jog, I was saying to Jules, like, I think we need a producer. You know, I had a few names that had been sort of recommended to me, but because Jules was doing radio at the time, I thought he'd be a good person to ask. And he's like, you realize you're jogging with, like, you know, the national radio producer for the SCA. And I was like, oh, yeah. And so I think for Sam at the time, he liked podcasts, but he, you know, hadn't really dipped his toe into that world. So it was a kind of a new thing for all of us. And what Sam has brought to the show is everything that's established now. So all the strategic decisions, all the advertising that comes in, you know, even the way we have set up our Patreon, like Sam's just very good at knowing how to market, you know, and the value, because that's the other thing is Will and I didn't know what the show was worth or what we should be asking for. And we both have managers and agents, but, you know, they don't really work in that world either. I think that, you know, especially, I mean, my agent's an acting agent. Will's agent is a stand-up agent. So podcasting kind of falls right in the middle. So there, our agents have been quite happy for us to just leave us alone. And, well, whatever you guys want to do with this, that's your thing.
Yeah. And do you think, like, because I think with podcasting, particularly when you started, because you said you weren't sure about, like, you know, what it was worth and what the audience could be valued at, like, at the time, there really weren't that many, at least Australian podcasts, unless it was like a radio catch-up podcast.
Yeah.
So I find that really interesting. But do you, like, what are your thoughts on the industry now in terms of podcasting? Because I love podcasts. I'm obsessed with them.
Me too.
Do you think that it's just oversaturated or do you think it can still grow?
Look, it's definitely where I think it's kind of a bit... I don't think it's oversaturated because, you know, in the same way that streaming has kind of democratized music, you know, and whatever genre of music you're into. Like when I was a teenager, you know, you had to listen to commercial stations or Triple J and that's where you got your music from and you were sort of fed what bands you could listen to. Now, whatever subset of, you know, your favorite genre of music is, you can find some guy on Spotify who has like 10,000 downloads and that's it. And if you're really into his work, then you can follow it. So I think that it is saturated, but I do think that, you know, if what you're doing is of value, you'll find some kind of audience, whether or not that's retirement money or even a career is a different question. I think where I'm cynical about where the industry has gone is what Spotify is doing, where they're going to Barack Obama or Conan O'Brien or, you know, some celebrity and saying, hey, here's $1 million, you know, chat to your famous friends.
Yeah.
Because the difference with that is for those guys, A, they've got multi-million dollar careers in other areas to distract them. Whereas, you know, especially during the pandemic, for Will and I, it all became about the podcast because we weren't doing anything else and we're genuinely passionate about it. And there's been a million reasons for us to stop doing TOEFOP in the intervening years. Like there's been no imperative beyond the fact that we really enjoy it. So I think that that is the thing that separates us. Like I've had a lot of people over the years who've contacted me to say, hey, I've got an idea for a podcast. You know, what do I need to do? And the first thing I always say is if you're doing it for financial reasons, like if you're thinking that, you know, you'll do this for 6 months and then someone will buy you out, that's not going to happen. Like, I don't think, I mean, I'm sure it has happened in the past, but that's not really how it works unless you get these huge numbers. And that's the other thing. I'm not sure if people realize, but, you know, the way that advertisers value podcasts is based on numbers, you know. It's either download numbers or the way the audience interacts with your show, how long they listen for, what part of the show they listen to. There's all these, like, very complicated metrics. So I think that for us, you know, we have an established loyal audience that is very regular. Like you see the numbers every week and that is worth something. But I also think that that has been an organic long-term development. You know, this is sort of 10 years of consistency. And that's the other bit of advice I give to people is, like, if you're going to do it, don't do, like, you know, 15 episodes and then disappear for 6 months and then come back and do another 15 episodes. Like, I think you can do series, but you can't let it, you can't let it stagnate for too long. Because I know as a consumer, my habits, and if my feed of a certain podcast goes dry, I'll delete it. I'll stop listening to it. I'll move on to something else. And there's a lot of competition. So, yeah, I think that if Australia, like, Australia and podcasting is like anything else, is that we don't have those audience numbers where, like, if you can get 1% of an American audience into your shit, that's 3 million people. You know, that's not nothing. You know, you can, if you get 3 million people to spend $20 on you a year, either your Patreon or your merch, that's a pretty good income you're making there. It's not the same here. You know, I think, you know, we sort of talked about it last year where it's like, well, what is TOEFOP? And it's like, well, we do podcasts, but we sort of see ourselves more as like an independent media company. You know, like, I think that, you know, there's the podcast, but when things open up a bit more and we have the ability to do live shows again, and we can expand a little bit of what it is that we do. But I think ultimately it comes down to, we like doing it.
Yeah.
You know, that's not, we haven't become Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin yet, where we can't stand to be in the same room as each other. I mean, we're never in the same room, so yeah, that helps.
Well, so what I think about podcasting that's really interesting, and it's funny you say that cynicism around, because I totally agree with this idea that a lot of podcasts now seem to be, hey, like, I'm this person and my podcast is me talking to interesting people about friends. Interesting things. Yeah, or my famous friends, right? Now, ironically, Willosophy, our flagship podcast, is an interview podcast, but I do think that, like, that podcast was definitely ahead of the curve in terms of being an Australian podcast doing that, right? So let's, like, rule out that. And I do kind of feel cynical about that, because those podcasts don't really seem to have a point to me, and I will always, like, cherry pick the episodes to be like, okay, Conan O'Brien is talking to, like, Ray Romano, and I used to watch Everybody Loves Raymond, so I'm going to listen to that episode because that sounds cool. But I'm not going to listen to every episode. Some people would. What I think is potentially more valuable in the podcast space that isn't actually necessarily being as explored as much is this idea of, like, podcasts can be so niche, right? And an example I always use is the fact that I love the band Blink-182. Right? I love them so much. And no one in my life cares about them as much as me. So I can never have conversations with people about the band Blink-182. But there are three Blink-182 podcasts that talk about, one talks about all the new information about Blink, one track by track reviews all of their songs, and one's like another news one. And I'm like, I care so much. And that is the only way that I can engage with other people who are into that, other people who are into the same, like, fandoms and communities as me. And I definitely think there's value in that, even though your numbers might not be massive. Like, you do have a demographic that you know will tune into this, and you kind of have an idea of what their interests are and what kind of things they might be into, and therefore what you can sell them. And I think I think TOEFOP's kind of like that, because it's like, it's, you know, it's not necessarily niche in terms of topic, but it's like niche in terms of, like, what it is, right? It's like, it's, and I think there is value in that, and you grow these kind of, like, cult audiences, as opposed to, like, okay, Conan's chatting to Ray Romano, to use
Charlize Theron or someone.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that there is an episode. Sorry, guys. Sorry to disappoint people. I don't think there is a Ray Romano episode of Conan, but if there is, I would definitely listen, because I love that show.
I mean, I do wish sometimes that we had pivoted at some point into a specific area, like movie reviews, because I listen to those shows that are all about sport or all about music or all about film. And it's so easy, because you just come out and you talk about the latest releases, or you talk about what's happened on the weekend or whatever. It's like, there's been times with TOEFOP where I'm like, what the fuck are we going to talk about that we have not talked about a million times before? But we always seem to find a way. And I think, you know, I always put on my consumer hat, you know, and there are podcasts that I listen to that are extremely niche. And the only reason that I am listening to them is because I started listening to them, you know, years and years ago, which I imagine is the same thing for a lot of TOEFOP listeners. I think if we took a hiatus for 6 months, that would probably be the death for TOEFOP, because I think that we are a comforting, you know, weekly thing that people can rely on, whether or not they even pay that much attention to what we're saying. Every Wednesday, there's a new episode. Mm. You kind of know our personalities by now.
Yeah.
You know how Will's going to react in certain situations, how I'm going to react. And I think there's a comfort to it. I always equate it to when I'm the youngest of nine kids. Mm. And so growing up in a big family, there was always big discussions at, you know, family dinner or Christmas or whatever the gathering was. And, you know, I would sit there as the youngest because no one wanted to hear what I had to say. So it was like being a podcast listener. I couldn't answer back.
I was the youngest in the family too. I completely relate to that because I always just, right. I actually always just used to feel stupid if I said anything because I was the youngest and what I was saying probably was stupid anyway. But maybe that's why I like podcasts so much, because I don't have to offer anything. I just listen.
I 100% think that that's the appeal to me, is it's comforting. I like, because I do like music, but I wouldn't say like I'm an aficionado. Like I've barely listened to anything that's been made after 2005. And it's not like I can, you know, name, you know, specific albums and tracks and all that kind of stuff. But, and so when I listen to things, I do occasionally listen to music, but more often than not, I listen to people talk. And it is, to me, like some of the hardest laughs I've ever had. I mean, even yesterday I was washing the car and I was listening to a podcast and I was listening to these guys talk. And one of them said something that made me laugh so hard I had to actually stop what I was doing. Mm. And I thought, if anyone is watching me with my little wireless, you know, headset in at the moment, I'm going to look insane, because I literally like put the vacuum down and had to sit down so I could just get this laugh out. But I do find, you know, that kind of intimacy, you don't get that from radio. Like radio is very much about, you know, even if it's Triple J, it's about driving you from either one ad break to the next, or it's like driving you from one segment to the next. And obviously the music sort of helps do that. But there is something about podcasting, even if it is about movies or sport or whatever, where you are getting an invitation into getting to know the hosts. Like I always love to hear how other shows do their ad reads, because I think that, you know, there are the super professional ones who read it like radio announcers, and then there's the ones who deconstruct the ad.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Graham Kennedy had his talk show in Melbourne, you know, in the 60s and 70s, you know, he was famous for taking these commercials for soap powder and turning into a 10-minute bit, you know, where he would make fun of the sponsor, he would make fun of himself. He would just, it was almost like theatre sports, where it's like, give me a topic, and then he would just go off. And so, you know, that's, I think, my measure of whether or not I'm going to be into a podcast is, okay, are they just going to give me a straight read, or are they going to be able to leverage some kind of like material out of this?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I often, even like with TOEFOP, which is a great example, like sometimes just because when I'm editing, but also I'm often on the call when you guys are recording. So I guess listener number one of every TOEFOP episode.
Yeah, that's right.
I get to hear them. You're all listener zero. Live. Yeah, I'm listener zero. And yeah, like I don't know. Do you guys see? I've always wondered if you see these when we do Skype. Sometimes I react, like I do a laughing.
Yes.
Oh, you do see those. Okay, so
yeah.
I do that when I actually am laughing, because I'm like, oh, maybe just in case Will and Charlie aren't sure if this is funny, I'll just like make sure they know by doing the laughing emoji. But I just still remember like some of the shit that gets said, like when Will was talking about Tenet and about, I haven't seen the film, but it's to do with traveling backwards in time. And Charlie, you just go, oh, so does that mean that Pooh goes back into their bums? And just stuff like that. Like, yeah. I completely that's agree. Some
of the highbrow chat. If you've never listened to TOEFOP, that's the kind of highbrow chat you can expect.
I think it's, you're right about like podcasts are absolutely a companionship medium, right? Like there are some There are some podcasts I listen to where they're like 2 hours long and I don't even listen in one sitting. I'm just like, okay, I'm like cleaning my room. I'll put on 15 minutes of this. And then literally a week later, I'm like, oh, I'll listen to another 30 minutes of this 2 hour pod, right? And I'm on my app, it's got like in progress podcasts. And I just like go, oh yeah, I'll dip back into this. Whereas radio absolutely serves a purpose of being about immediacy and live interaction. And, you know, that's why I think talkback radio is still so well rating in Melbourne and Sydney and everywhere, really. Like, there's always going to be a place for talkback. And I think that's the only thing that podcasts have, that radio has over podcasts, is that you can't listen, you obviously can't listen to a pre-recorded thing and call in and be on the show, right? But then I guess radio doesn't have necessarily that community building aspect and that responsiveness aspect and that, yeah, definitely community comes into mind for radio, for podcasting, whereas radio definitely feels more like breaking news, let's talk about it, let's talk politics, let's talk, there's a car accident on the freeway, like, let's talk about it.
Okay, well, yeah, what I like about you know, this era of no gatekeepers and being able to create your own work is that, you know, you can find your own voice. Like, if you're a podcaster or a YouTuber or whatever, there is no one actually telling you what to do. So you can really be as original or as niche as you want.
Which is kind of why my stuff is actually really bad, because no one's actually giving me tips on where to improve. But please continue. Well,
That's interesting, because I did want to talk to you about your podcasts, and you've taken a pop culture angle, which is, you know, there's a lot of ones out there. But what I find really interesting about your reference points is you seem to have quite a broad range of interest when it comes to music and film. And like, I see that you started watching older films, like you're trying to watch like a classic, like more classic movies and older sitcoms. And I really loved when you did your review of the Friends reunion, because I mean, look, my podcast Mike, I don't know if this is an insult, but I don't know how old you are. Like, I honestly, you seem like a young person.
No,
to me.
That's because my voice makes me sound like I'm still like 17, but I'm actually...
Well, your voice and your cherubic face, right. You look like a baby. And so to see you like talking about Friends, I'm like, surely Friends was over by the time podcast Mike was born.
How into Friends are you, just out of interest? Are you super into it?
Well, it's funny. I when I saw that episode of your show, I actually wanted to bring it up on, or I think I even did bring it up on Tofop, but Will hadn't seen the reunion and I don't know how interested he is in Friends. So this is a good segue for us to talk about it, because I loved the first 3 or 4 seasons of Friends, and like, I watched it when they originally came out, back when, you know, when Foxtel was just starting and there was only like 5 channels to choose from. And then I drifted away from it for whatever reason. But when I got Foxtel, like, my wife and I, it was one of those shows where, you know, if we wanted to watch something quick while we're eating dinner, we would just, there was always an episode of Friends on. And the thing that I always found amazing about it was, even though I was only really familiar with the story arcs of the first 4 seasons, I could literally plug in at any point over 10 seasons and within 5 minutes be up to speed on what's going on. Maybe would need a refresher from someone who had seen more, but I could really like just plug in. So I kind of have an idea of where the stories went with Friends, and I understand, like, you know, the evolution of the characters and stuff. But I was really interested to see, when you were talking about the reunion, you made a point which I had the exact same one, which was that Matt LeBlanc was so good looking when it started. And you kind of forget, because Joey kind of morphed into like almost like a tubby, like you know, punchline. Like, he just, that became his thing, was, you know, he loved to eat. And he, like Homer Simpson, got progressively dumber as the series went on. But then you see those, like that first season, and even like the headshots that they were showing around, you know, the producers were talking about. He's a hunk.
He's a hunk. He's actually the definition of a hunk. Joey from Friends is the definition of a hunk, but then in the Friends reunion special, he now looks like my uncle, which is not an insult. He looks like the typical, like the blank slate uncle, right? And yeah, it was just surprising to see. And I'm like, God, this guy's so good looking. What the hell?
It's funny you should say about the uncle, because I don't know. Did you see the meme? The Matt LeBlanc is your Irish uncle meme. And like, you're Italian, obviously. So it's like, clearly he crosses over like all kind of cultures and generations.
Yeah.
But it was such a fascinating, because I hadn't really kept track of them. And in the mid 90s when the first series of Friends, like it was Beatlemania. Like I think I was in year 11 when the first series came out. And then when it really caught fire is in first and second year uni. And it was like event television. Like you would be home on a Tuesday night to watch the latest episode of Friends. And like I even knew girls who carried around like pictures of like Matthew Perry in their handbags and stuff, because he was like a heartthrob.
Yeah, right.
And it's, I don't know. Like I know there's been mega sitcoms since, like Two and a Half Men and How I Met Your Mother, but it wasn't quite the same rock star, because they were a good looking cast and the show did have that kind of, I don't know what the word is, because it's not rock and roll, because that suggests like it was edgy. It definitely wasn't edgy. It was very mainstream, but it just had, it was more like pop stars. Like they were like the equivalent of sitcom pop stars, where, you know, you would have your favorite one, you know, it was a reflection of your personality, who you chose to like kind of said something about you. I even remember dating a girl at university because she kind of reminded me of Phoebe, and I sort of had a bit of a crush on Lisa Kudrow.
Interesting.
But then, go on.
Yeah, I think this is really interesting. It, funnily enough, and I'm not sure, in my video, obviously listeners can't see this, but in my video, I'm going to point at it. This reflection in that mirror, that is the painting that Chandler and Joey have. Oh, it's not a painting, it's a photo in their apartment.
Oh, right.
Now, If I was going to mislead you, I would say that I'm a Friends super fan and that belongs to me. It doesn't. It belongs to my housemate. She's obsessed with Friends, right? I only watched Friends for the first time. Like, similar to you, like, you get Friends.
Yeah.
You turn it on, you understand Ross and Rachel, you understand Chandler's, like, the funny guy, you understand Joey's the dopey guy, Phoebe's, like, the hippie girl. But I only watched it straight through for the first time in 2015. And
so you did all 10 seasons?
Yeah, I binged watched it while I was at uni.
Wow.
After How I Met Your Mother ended, because I loved How I Met Your Mother. But I totally agree with you that culturally, a show like Friends, particularly in the 90s, there weren't that many things then, right? Now it's like, not only is TV competing with itself, but with like YouTube and TikTok and all these things fighting for your attention. So of course, like a show, even a show like How I Met Your Mother from the mid 2000s could never have been culturally as significant as Friends, despite the fact that it is a successful show that a lot of people like in a similar way to Friends. And I also think that like, it's funny you said like people have their favorite one, like they have their favorite friend, but I don't often hear like with a show like Seinfeld, and I know that Seinfeld and Friends are kind of like the antitheses yes. of each other, but like no one's really like, oh, I love George. George is just me. Or I love Jerry. Like in that show, you just kind of accept them as four different people. You don't, I personally don't really like all of them. Maybe I relate to Jerry because he's probably the most standard one. But with Friends, like everyone I know is like, I'm a Chandler, I'm a Phoebe, I'm a Rachel. And I think that is something to speak for.
But you hit the nail on the head. The characters in Seinfeld are not meant to be likable.
Yeah.
They're all horrible. They're all horrible, neurotic, self-centered, unlikable people. It's the same way that, you know, in Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David playing a version of Larry David, he's not meant to be likable. What he's playing on there is all of the flaws and foibles of human beings. Whereas you're right, Friends is the antithesis. It's all the glossy, you know, edges taken off. I mean, you know, like a fucking chef and someone who works in fashion owning a gigantic loft-style apartment in New York City, you know, and a guy who works in whatever commerce and an out-of-work actor having the apartment across the road. It's all fantasy. But what I think, I remember talking to a writer in LA, a guy who wrote sitcoms, and he said that, like, Friends is the perfect... If you wanted to kind of teach yourself how to write comedy or how to write sitcoms, Friends is just like the perfect structure. Like the way the archetypes they have, the way they have their A storyline and B storyline, the way they open with like a cold opening and finish with like a cold ender in a way, like they just have, it just has beautiful symmetry. And like all good TV shows, self-contained TV shows, it doesn't matter what happens. Nothing ever really changes, which was what made the reunion so shocking to see how much that changed.
And I think that was one of the reasons that they originally were like, we're not gonna do a Friends reunion, because that's not, the Friends reunion isn't going to be what people remember about Friends because of that change, right? Like, people remember Friends as this glossy hot show of all these attractive, funny, successful people in New York, not like grown-ups who are showing their age and aren't actually friends anymore. Do you know what I mean? And like, just quickly going back to Curb, because what I love so much about Curb, and similarly with Seinfeld, and you've drawn on this on Tofop a lot with yourself, but it's like the idea with Larry David and then like sort of by extension George Costanza is that like Larry has to pick apart the minutiae and etiquette of every situation, even if it means having an argument with a friend. Like, even if it means losing a friend, he will stand by the principle of thing. And I think the reason that show is so popular is because, like, there is something, like, devilishly endearing about a guy who does want to fight for the principle, right? Like, I do, like, sometimes I see Larry and I'm like, oh, yeah, like, that is pretty annoying. Like, I would be annoyed about this, but I would never bring it up. And I think, I that show to me is just so well written. And I believe it, to some extent, it's improvised. Like, I think there's a skeleton of what the scene is, but the rest is actually the actors are improvising lines and stuff.
It feels like it. It definitely, I think, like The Office, it's that, or you know, Christopher Guest movies, it's that awkwardness. It's that honing into, because I think that's the, you know, people talk about, you know, it's a fine line between tragedy and comedy. I think the one thing that bonds all of us as human beings, I mean, love, like we all, you know, want to be loved and understand what it's like to be in love or out of love or wanting love.
Actually, I don't.
You're just a sociopath.
Yeah, I'm a sociopath. I don't want that.
But to me, the most powerful emotion and the most gripping dramatically, and when I say dramatically, I mean in drama and comedy, is humiliation. There is nothing more crushing than the feeling of being exposed as a fraud or finding yourself in a situation in which you're out of your depth and having to kind of tread water. And I think that, you know, the best comedy is when you are going, fuck, I understand that. That was me, you know? Like, you're at a party where you don't know anyone and you're telling a story and you realize no one's listening, so you start lying, but then you realize that people listening to the story know you're lying, but you're too far in, so you keep lying. Like, it's that. I mean, I often will just, like, shudder, and you know, for no apparent reason, because I'm suddenly reminded of something that I did when I was a teenager or my early 20s or 30s, where it's just like a humiliating memory that comes flooding back. And I think the best writers or the best comedians, when they're, you know, writing those shows, like that's what David Brent is, right? Like, I'm working on a job at the moment, and there's this guy who is sort of peripheral to the job, but he's there all the time. And I hadn't met him until I started the job, and he sort of just sidled up to me and he just started like cracking jokes and stuff. And some of them were like a little like, you know, inappropriate. And as he's talking to me, I'm like, holy fuck, this is David Brent. Like, he just, you know, he kind of saw himself as this chilled out entertainer. And, you know, he, because, you know, there was actors around and cameras and stuff, you know, he got stars in his eyes and stuff. And it just, like, when you really hit upon that archetype, whether it's, you know, that version of Larry David or that David Brent character, it rings so true, because Like, for instance, my wife, because she grew up in the UK, she can't watch The Office because David Brent is such an honest representation of that kind of middle-aged, desperately lonely male, right. You know, who feels yeah. like he could have been a star if only, you know, he'd taken a different path in life. And and that is, to me, you know, to bring it back to like TOEFOP, those stories that people seem to really like, the mundane-ish stories I tell, I think that's what hooks people in, is it's like, oh yeah, I know that feeling of, oh shit, like my phone's gone missing. I'm immediately going to, like today, here we go. Here's a story that would be for the TOEFOP, but I'll give it just for the FOEFOP audience.
Exclusive.
It's an exclusive mundane-ish. I took my car to the car wash yesterday, and I was doing it all myself, and I didn't have my wireless headphones, so I had my, you know, plug-in headphones, and I had a bunch of shit going on. And meanwhile, Jem's calling me saying, you need to get back because we've got to do this thing. And so I was in a bit of a rush, and I was rushing about, and you know, the headphones were getting tangled up in the vacuum, and my sunglasses fell out, and I was getting so fucking shitty that I just kind of took off my headphones, took off my hat, put everything to the side just so I could concentrate on vacuuming the car, and then, you know, packed everything up and took off. And so then this morning when we went to go out for breakfast, I'm like, oh fuck, I can't find my sunglasses. I can't. And I'm like, God damn it. That's right. I kind of took them off and I put them over there. And then I said, I've left it at the car wash. I can't fucking believe it. And so Jim's like, well, why don't you just call the car wash? And so then I spent the morning like trying to find, because it was an opportunistic car wash. I just drove past this place and pulled in. Then I couldn't remember one was it, because now there's like two car washes exactly the same as each other. And this one didn't have a phone number. And then I'm like, I'm just going to jump in the car. I'm just going to drive there. And Jim's like, no, like, what are you talking about? Just, we'll get you some new sunglasses. And I spent the whole morning fuming about it and just like getting really angry at myself. And then I get a text from Jem, and she's in the car and she's wearing my sunglasses that just fallen down beside the car. But
stories like that. All right. Can I tell one that you've just reminded me of, a mundane-ish thing that happened to me that's very kind of Larry David. And this might be one of the worst things that I've ever done, but it happened when I was at primary school, and I'm ready to tell it. So. Okay.
Fantastic. FOFOP exclusive number two.
I was in class and I had a dollar coin, right? And I'm just flipping the dollar coin in class. And then all of a sudden I flipped it. It bounced on the floor. It's rolled away. I didn't know where it was. I couldn't find it. And like, that's what I thought. Then I saw this other kid in class flipping a $1 coin. And I go, hey, that's mine from before. Give it over. He's like, no, this is mine. I'm like, no, I lost my coin. You've picked it up. Just give it back. Anyway, he wouldn't give it back. My mum is a teacher at the school. So I go, well, if there's ever a time to use this power, it's now. Hey, mum, this kid's stolen my dollar. I need it back. Mum goes up to him, right? Tells him off, says, give my son your dollar. Like, falsely accuses him, essentially, because the twist in the story was the dollar was in my pocket the whole time. And my mum's forced this kid to give him the dollar. She could have gotten fired for that, right? If that kid went home and told his mum, and I can just hear it now, the Curb Your Enthusiasm frolic theme, as soon as I like reach into my pocket and take that dollar out, just starting to play. But I felt horrible about it.
I have a similar story. It ends virtually the same way, but I was a bit older than you, where my friends all gave me cash to go to the bottle shop to buy a slab. And so I had like $70 in my pocket. And so I went to the bottle shop, and as I was walked there, and as I was walking in, the pub were kicking out this old drunk, like this middle-aged guy who was pissed, and he was staggering about, and there's a cab waiting for him. Anyway, I watched this guy stumble out, and then I put my hands in my pockets and I go into the bottle shop and I go to pay for the slab, and I've only got $20 in my pocket. I'm like, fuck, where did I drop that 50? And so I go back outside, and I see the drunk guy, and he's staggering around, and he's picking a $50 note up off the ground. And so I go running over, and I'm like, "Well, no, mate, that's mine, that's mine." It's like, "No, it's mine, it's mine." So we're having this tug of war. So I call security. They come over. They separate us. I get the $50. They shove this guy in the cab, and the cab takes off. I walk in the bottle shop. I put the 50 in my other pocket. I robbed this old drunk guy. Yeah. Like, he literally dropped the 50 on the ground. And I just mugged him for it. So, but, you know, I feel I take the moral superiority.
You're right, though. That is actually exactly the same story as mine, except really when you think about it, 50 times worse. Because I only stooched my guy out of $1, but you stole $50 off this guy. Horrible.
From an old drunk who was about to get in a cab, who probably then got kicked out of the taxi. I mean, it's a butterfly effect, right? Like, who knows what happened to that guy? I mean, hopefully he survived the evening.
I actually think, you know the show Hard Quiz? You know how you were talking about humiliation being funny? Do you get a kick out of people on Hard Quiz? Like, because you nominate your special topic, and I just always find it funny. And my biggest fear about that show is going on the show and Tom Gleason asks you questions about your special topic and you get them all wrong. It's like, you nominated it. How did you get every question wrong? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I actually am about to do an interview, like on a podcast. Like they wanted to chat to me and they asked me that specific thing, was like, what are you passionate about? Like, what's, can you give us like three things that you're passionate about? And I was like, I had that exact thing. It's like, well, I don't know. Like, what can I? Oh, because Sam was the one who set it up, and he said, "Oh, and can it not be football or podcasting?" Because clearly that's like two things I'm quite well known for. So then I'm like, I don't know that there's any topic that, like, if you really drilled me down on it, that I would consider myself like a genius on. Like, I think the topics I eventually went back to them with was the Mad Max films, which I think I'm quite knowledgeable on.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about it. But you seem to know a lot about them.
Yeah, but if they dig deep in terms of, I couldn't tell you like the cast below the first two or three top billed actors. I certainly don't know like the real, real nerd trivia about it. And then I also think it's a case of, it's like me with my album knowledge. Like when, like I was saying earlier about music, is I know like quite a lot of music, but I don't know what the songs are called. Like, I don't know. I mean, Nevermind, classic album. I could probably name three songs that I could match the name of the song to the song. Because all I know is, I know what it sounds like. I don't know the name of it. I wasn't one of those kids who would, get the liner notes or the album and, and learn everything about it.
That's interesting because for me, like, and you were saying that, like, I have a broad range of, like, pop culture that I like. And my thing is that if I like something, I really like it. Like, I will just like, I will devote time to just learning everything about it. And I mean, I might regret this if I'm ever on Hard Quiz and I get all my questions wrong, but like,
what's your topic?
What would my topic would be, you're gonna laugh at me so much, but I'm just gonna say it anyway because we're on a podcast. It would be Super Smash Brothers, which is a fighting game franchise. I told you you'd laugh.
No, is it the Mario Brothers? Is Super Smash Brothers
Mario Brothers? Is one of the Super Smash Brothers, and as is Luigi, but it's like a crossover fighting game of different video game franchises.
Like when you say crossover, like is it like Mortal Kombat where you got Luigi ripping out people's spines and stuff like that? Is it not that violent?
The fighting game aspect. It's not as violent as Mortal Kombat, but it's sort of sort of like the Avengers. Like you've got Mario, Sonic the Hedgehog, Pac-Man. What's it? You're into games. What's a game you like?
No, I'm not at all. This is the thing. I'm not into games.
I've heard you talk about games before. I've
talked about games, but here's the thing. I have not played a console since, I'd say, 2007. Yeah, okay. I put a tweet out a little while back saying, like, if I was to pick up video games again, would it be like defrosting a caveman, in modern times?
Possibly.
Where I just wouldn't be able to cope with just too much stimulation, like if the graphics and the sound just advanced to a point where I won't understand it. But I've never been very good at video games, like intuitive. Like I've got friends who are gamers who will, get the new Resident Evil and finish it in 2 days, whereas that would be like a 4 or 5 months for me. And that's, that's just because and that's me playing on an easy setting. I just don't have the intuition for games. And a lot of the games I liked, well, I don't know what you call them, like I guess like adventure games where there's a bit of action, but it's, like Resident Evil or there was one I loved. on PlayStation Uncharted? 2 called Jack.
Oh, Jack and Daxter.
Yeah, Jack. Yeah. I love that. That was like, so I played both of those games. But I remember finishing one of those and talking to my mate who's a massive gamer. And he's like, oh, yeah, but did you do all the side missions as well? I'm like, the side what? And he's like, oh, yeah, there's literally like 150 side missions where if you finish those, you can tool up and then you can get this like super turbocharged hovercraft. I'm like, it's too much fucking time.
Yeah, this
too
is my
time. I can't spare that.
My problem with games these days is that they're just too big.
The commitment, you mean? Like time commitment and...
It's just the commitment. Yeah, it's like... When I was a kid and I fell in love with playing video games, I was playing Donkey Kong Country, right? Where the aim of the game is to move from the start of the stage to the end. There's no side quests. There's no open world exploration. Now every game, it's like, oh, you can do the main quest, but there's all these side things and you can explore. And I just like, I want to be told what to do in a game. Yeah. I don't want to have to be left to my own devices, or I just struggle with the choice.
Well, actually, having said that, I lie. I have played a console since 2007, but not mine. But I remember going to my friend's place and his daughter had the new Spider-Man. And I loved it, but I didn't do any of the missions. I literally just swung around New York City because I was like, these graphics are, and he had a big TV and I'm like, this is incredible. I would be quite happy to just do this. In fact, one of my favorite things to do, and it has become a thing, like, you know, before YouTube, I would go around my mates' places, you know, and generally everyone would be like very stoned. And I was never good at playing video games, but my mates were good. And I used to love just getting stoned and watching them play because they were good. And because, like, you know, I would get to sort of see parts of this open world that I was never good enough to get to. And I really, but I also really enjoyed the banter, like, you know, watching them play games and them chatting and stuff. And then that became what it is now. I mean, that's sort of like the genesis of things like Twitch and stuff, right?
Yeah. And I think, like, for whatever reason, I don't really like watching people stream games. I think it's because I love playing them so much, I don't want to watch someone else play. And I was always that kid, you know, when you're at your friend's house and they've got the controller and you're like,
give it to me.
Play, right? But yeah. Yeah, I think it is really interesting with Twitch and YouTube because there are people making millions of dollars off streaming themselves playing video games, like literally millions of dollars in sponsorships and Patreon. It's so lucrative. And I think, I guess, like, to circle back to earlier in what we were talking about, one of the things that upsets me, I guess, about creating content, and maybe you've experienced this, I reckon you would have maybe, because you kind of touched on it. It seems like now with the YouTube algorithm and the TikTok algorithm and the Instagram algorithm, whatever platform it is, it seems like the only way to grow is to just be like in one lane. Like, I'm the movies guy, I'm the politics guy, I'm the music girl or whatever it might be. Like, you know, especially on new platforms like TikTok, you go on big people's feed and they're just doing the same, not the same thing every time, but it's like, I only do this one thing. I only focus on this, which I totally get from an algorithmic perspective why that is the case. But sometimes it upsets me because I feel like it limits you in what you can talk about. And it's like, you know, oh, I want to talk about this and it does well. But then I want to talk about something completely different and it gets no traction. No one watches it or cares about it. And it's like, but I don't want to just be, hey, I just talk about this one thing. I want to talk about all the stuff I like. And I guess it's sort of just coming to grips with like, okay, well, that's definitely not the best strategy if you want to become the biggest content creator in the world, which I don't. But like, you know, it's always good to want to grow your stuff. And for people to see it. And I guess you kind of touched on that a little bit with Tofop when you were like, should we just do movie reviews? Like, Mr. Sunday Movies, right? You've had him on this show and I watch a bunch of his videos. And I guess he does focus pretty much on movies and pop culture. And like one of my mates who's been on his podcast, Dave Lee, who does, he does cartoon reviews and cartoon YouTube videos, and that's how he grows. And he always says, when I try something different, it just like plummets my views. And I think that's a bit sad for me, I think.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually hadn't thought of that, but you're right. Like on one hand, you have this kind of completely democratized system of broadcast, you know, through podcasting and YouTube and stuff. But on the other hand, you're kind of beholden to the algorithm. Because I've never actually considered that. I've never actually considered that if I just keep hitting the same nail, eventually the algorithm will pick up on that and direct eyeballs to that. You know, a lot of when we put those TOEFOP clips up, they're completely different. They're unrelated topics, you know. And I remember I did have a meeting with a, I don't know what you call him. It's like a social media manager or someone who, you know, straddles that line between social media but publicist. And I was saying, hey, look, you know, we've got this YouTube channel. What are your tips? Like, I think I was sort of saying, you know, if we're going to video TOEFOP or if we're going to do more video content, what's the best kind of medium for it? Should I be focusing on YouTube or Instagram or both? And he was saying, to be honest, he's gone, you really just need to create some disruption. So he said, have you destroyed anyone? Like, have you taken anyone down? Have you, you know, he's gone, those clickbait headlines, the big yellow letters on the video, like podcast Mike destroys Charlie, you know? He said,
yeah,
like it's gross, but that's genuinely what people will click on. And then once people start clicking on it. And so, because I have noticed that even the more moderate kind of YouTubers I follow who do work in the political sphere, or even if they, you know, they're just pop culture commentators, they'll have the most clickbaity titles for their videos when it's a fairly tame actual content, you know. It'll be like, you know, we destroy Zack Snyder's Justice League. And it's just a review, but it's not really a destruction. But that is further evidence that the internet is designed or it runs off hate more than it runs off kind of like cooperation and agreement.
It is, though, and like just... feels like you do have to, like, of course, like, the content has to be good. Like, that's not a question. But at the same time, it does feel like you need to know how to game the system a bit.
Yeah.
Right? And you need to know, oh, well, YouTube favors this and YouTube doesn't like this, so I'm not going to write this or I'm not going to do this. And in some ways, I feel like it dilutes... you know, it detracts from what the content is because it's not necessarily the best content that's getting seen the most. Mm. It's just whoever was able to understand the algorithm best and play to its advantages. But I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to control that.
Yeah, I guess in the long run, though, you eventually find the content you're looking for, don't you? Like, I think because you will get suggested if you're looking at, you know, whatever it is, movie review videos on YouTube, you'll get directed to other people. And like all the channels I subscribe to have all been off the back, me randomly or being suggested a video, me liking that, checking out more of their stuff. And eventually after a few weeks going, well, I seem to be looking for this person every couple of weeks. I might as well subscribe now. So I do feel like,
yeah.
I mean, it's a bit of a red pill, blue pill question. It's like, am I using choice here, or is this all part of the design of the Matrix where I think I'm choosing what I follow or I'm being told what to follow? I don't know.
But you're right. Like, there have been just so many channels and creators that I've found that have come up on my suggested. But like, I am waiting. I do sometimes feel like I'm wading through a lot of mud to get there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? It is funny because, you know, you're saying earlier that it's like it's a saturated market, but some do stand out. Like I reckon like the Weekly Planet and, you know, what James does with Mr. Sunday Movies, like he's got his own voice. Like it's definitely different to the other, you know, like your Screen Rants or Screen Junkies or any of those other kind of movies. You know, it's very much in his voice and him and Meso's voice. And I think that, when we had very early discussions before we sort of joined Planet Broadcasting, I was just a fan of his. I just had, again, found one of his videos, liked what he'd said, and then started subscribing. And then I started messaging him on social media just to get some advice because I could see what was happening with his channel. And his advice was, everything that I do feeds into everything. So the podcast feeds into the YouTube channel feeds into the podcast, and we just try and keep things, what would you call it? Like, it's just a fairly, it's a closed ecosystem where if you follow one thing or like one thing, it'll take you to the next thing. And I think that was his recommendation for us was like, well, he said, start by just putting up full episodes of TOEFOP, you know, just with a, you know, just an image. And so people just are at least aware that you have a presence on YouTube, and then you can start, you know, recommending people, putting the clip shows as a recommended views and vice versa. And I think that, I mean, I think it's, the faster route would be to just start taking down some celebrities or, you know, to start destroying some people and getting those real clickbaity headlines. But I just don't think that we're interested in that. Like I am not resigned. It sounds quite defeatist. I am comfortable and very accepting with where TOEFOP fits in the kind of new media ecosystem. You know, we're an independent media network, and this is kind of what we do. These are the shows we produce. And I feel like there will be opportunities to do other more commercial things off the back of TOEFOP. But I think that, you know, the integrity of what we do, or the crux of what we do, will always be what it is now. You know what I mean? I don't think we're going to suddenly start changing the show because we've been, you know, brought over to a major platform or anything like that. Because it's
go Joe Rogan, head over to Spotify for $500 million or some kind of deal like that.
It is interesting because I have heard, you know, some people go. Like, I sort of dip in and out of Rogan. Like, there's some things I like, and obviously he's got some very problematic guests and opinions on some things.
I was just listening to the episode you did last time with Osha, and you were talking about this exact thing, and I couldn't agree more. Like, like you said, especially in recent times, it's been pretty ludicrous, a lot of the content coming out of that show.
Well, I just listened to the Sanjay Gupta episode. Did you hear that? Which is the CNN doctor.
No.
And it was a really interesting, robust discussion. It actually brought me back around to going, okay, like, I don't agree with him, but I think that I can... It was an interesting discussion because so you know that CNN went really hard on him, like most sort of mainstream media, about the ivermectin and stuff. Mm. And so Sanjay Gupta, who is like, you know, the head medical journalist or medical guy on CNN, was on the show, and he wanted to talk to Joe about vaccinations and to try and convince Joe that he should get vaccinated. And it was just interesting hearing, like, it wasn't so much that he was anti-vax, it was just that he felt that because he'd already had COVID, he now had the antibodies, and he didn't want to, like, he felt like, why would he take a vaccine when the antibodies he already has naturally now are probably going to protect him more than the vaccine? Plus, even though the risk of vaccines is very, 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 very minor, it's a risk. And it was interesting hearing him talk about... So the reason why I think he is so anti-vax, he was all booked in to get vaccinated, but he had a couple of friends, I think fighters, who had terrible reactions to the vaccine.
Okay.
The thing about it, though, was it sounded incredibly anecdotal. Like, he was saying, oh, I had one friend who, you know, was sick for weeks afterwards, and another friend who had two strokes. And the doctor, Sanjay Gupta, was being very kind of like accommodating, wasn't challenging it, but it seemed a bit paranoid. You know what I mean? It seemed a bit like, I think I've only run into a few anti-vaxxers, and you sort of get quite early in talking to them that they've just made their mind up, you know, and, you know, while I disagree with the decision, I understand where he's coming from. You know, I understand. And I could hear the fear in his voice, and I could hear the fear in, you know, he's obviously a guy who treats his health and fitness really seriously. And, you know, he's fucking takes all kinds of crazy fucking supplements and, you know, his brain pills and all that kind of shit. But also, this is a guy who has serious questions about whether or not the moon landing was real. Like, I mean, I've heard him talk about that, and he acknowledges that there's been a conspiracy, but he also will kind of say, yeah, but there's some shady stuff going on. So I think you're really talking about someone who is a conspiracy theorist. So I guess that's the challenge, is like, can you accept the good with the bad? Can you separate, you know, the person from their opinion. And I don't know, like, I think it's a more complicated discussion because I do appreciate what he has done for podcasting as a medium. And I think that, you know, that show, whether or not you love it or you hate it or you like him or you hate him, I think it's exemplifies what podcasting should be, which is a 3-hour discussion where you really get into the weeds on stuff. And so, yeah, I don't know. I thought I was way off him, but that conversation made me go, oh, well, maybe for the right guest, I can go back and have a 3-hour listen. But yeah, it's when he gets his fucking crazy right-wing mates on that I'm like, oh, I can't listen to this
shit. Yeah. I think the only, I only really listen to full episodes if it's someone I really like. And I try to just avoid any political guests now because I'm just worried. I just get worried, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like the last one I would have listened to in full was when he had Tony Hawk on.
Right.
Because I was like, cool, I love Tony Hawk. I could listen to Joe Rogan talk to Tony Hawk for 3 hours. And I don't think they're going to talk about anything to do with politics. They're just going to talk about skateboarding, which is cool. And that was a great episode. Go and check it out, guys.
And after you've checked out Joe Rogan, you should check out Mike's podcast and YouTube channel. Do you want to give it a quick plug?
Oh, yeah, sure. I have a podcast called 20th Century Boy, which is just like me, sort of what Charlie said, just like talking about stuff like a all good podcast should be. And then can I also just plug... I'm about to bring back, I do a podcast that is a Harry Potter fan fiction podcast.
That's right.
When I was in year 7 at high school, I wrote a series of Harry Potter fan fiction books. And every week I read a chapter, usually with a guest, and we just debunk how a 13-year-old boy came up with a fan fiction where most of the jokes are based around farts. So, yeah, I'd love for people to check it out.
That's a real mystery. How does a 13-year-old boy
how could he possibly have come up with these fart puns? And yeah, so if you like Harry Potter, give it a listen. If you don't like Harry Potter, also give it a listen.
I know barely anything about Harry Potter, but I would love to be a guest at some point. If nothing else, then just to make fun of you. I think that would be a lot of fun.
I would love you and Will to be on it, but I thought it was just a bit too lame for you. Like, I did think they probably don't want to do it, so I'm not going to push it any further.
Oh, no. I remember you mentioning it. Yeah. So, like, I'm definitely up for it. I can't speak for Will, but I'm definitely up for it. So if you can't get TOEFOP, you'll definitely get a FOFOP on your podcast. Cool. Mike, thank you so much. And thank you so much for everything you do for the TOEFOP network. We literally would not have a network if it wasn't for you. You do all the heavy lifting. I know mainly with Will's shows, but everything you do with TOEFOP is great. And I'm just so glad that I could share a bit more of you with the audience, and make sure you check out Podcast Mike, or Radio Mike as he's known on social media. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you so much.